Hey everybody, thank you for listening to another edition of the Raptors Take 6 podcast. I am your host, Hunter Surplus. On this week's episode, Callum Wise and I talk about this week's performance by the Raptors. They played a tough double OT game against the Wizards, then played Boston at home in a tough loss and got a hard-fought win over the Phoenix Suns and then whooped all over the Memphis Grizzlies. Before we start though, just a reminder to go subscribe and follow us on Spotify and or Apple Music. Go follow us on Instagram at Take 6 Podcast and go follow us on Twitter at @take_6.
Welcome to the Take 6 Podcast.
What up? How's it going, everybody? Today, as always, joined by the wonderful Mr. Callum Wise. Callum, buddy, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good, you know, just getting through school, trying not to freeze while I'm walking there.
Yeah, typical stuff. I have Mondays off, so I didn't have to bear the cold at all today. I literally stayed inside the entire day. So I only had to deal with the freezing weekend, but nothing too bad today, which was nice. Although, for some reason, my heater isn't working in my house, so that's not nice. Like, basically, I was dealing with the cold. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have rubbed it in your face.
You're just living with it now.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm used to it at this point. So the Raptors had an interesting week this week, I would say. They played against the Wizards on Sunday, which was a wild game. We'll get into that later. They played against the Celtics on Wednesday after having 2 days rest, a much needed 2 days rest. And then on the second night of their back-to-back, they played the lowly Phoenix Suns, and then they had a fantastic win against the Memphis Grizzlies, which I don't think we're going to talk much about. I think the bulk of our conversation is really just going to be the Celtics game, the Wizards, and the Phoenix Suns. So I think we'll start off with what was more of the, you know, the marquee matchup, I would say, for this team this week. And that's the Raptors versus the Celtics. This game was interesting because afterwards, although this was probably one of the Celtics' biggest wins of the season so far, afterwards, the commentary and all the stories were all about Kyrie Irving this, Kyrie Irving that. He called LeBron, all that kind of stuff. And no one really talked about the fact that he put up, 26-18 against the Raptors, just killing
27.
Us. 27-18. Yeah. Just killing us late in this game, as he does normally. So I'm going to pose this question first before we get into the game, really. Should we be scared of this Celtics roster as it is right now? Not 4 months from now, not 3 months from now, not 2 months ago, right now. Should we be scared of this Celtics team?
I mean, the way that we've seen like all these games, it's been a fourth quarter decision maker. It's been like, I know when we beat them previously, it was determined by the fourth quarter. This game, especially determined by the fourth quarter. I don't know why it's swapping between the two teams, but it's whoever is lasting long, like especially when you have a guy like Kyrie Irving on their team who is just super clutch, probably one of the most clutch guys in the league. And then you also have Kawhi Leonard, who doesn't usually do as well late game. So maybe, I don't know, maybe we have to be scared of Irving in the fourth quarter. Just he's looking a lot. A lot more comfortable in his role at Boston now. And that whole thing about calling LeBron is just stupid publicity. I don't think has any like big meaning right now, especially Kyrie doesn't want to jeopardize this Boston team where it's at currently, especially with them playing pretty well recently. So, I mean, right now it's like games have been going 50-50 between us and them. So, am I scared of them? Not really. I still think that we could go against them in a 7-game series, probably taking it to 7. It's like, once again, it's just whoever can last longer. And with these two superstars it's pretty much anyone's game, really, because any one of the players, Kawhi or Kyrie, could take over a game and win, as we saw in that game where Kyrie just took over the fourth quarter and dominated.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on that. I don't think that the Raptors should necessarily be scared of this team when you have a team like Milwaukee with, you know, probably the best player in the conference right now on it. Austin is good, no doubt, but when it comes down to it, like, we still don't have a lot of our guys performing the way that we should. And I'm speaking more so towards the bench. And the reason that I'm not scared, the main reason here, is because of how I believe in the bench. For some reason, I believe in the bench, right? Like, well, for real, because we don't have, I mean, in this game, at least, we didn't have Jonas Valanciunas. We haven't had Valanciunas for the past few weeks. We're not going to have him still for the past few weeks. And I truly do believe that Valanciunas and or Ibaka make that second unit so much better. Because instead of having to throw out Greg Monroe against Aaron Baines or Greg Monroe against Al Horford, if God forbid that ever happens, the Raptors are pretty much screwed. Like, Baines isn't a killer, but if you look at Baines versus, he's a big boy, which you can't have a Ibaka on him. There's no way he'll get beat up. And I think that creates some more open space. And the biggest part of this, like, we were talking so much about how Kyrie Irving went off and Al Horford had a good game. Marcus Smart played half decently, like, defensively, all this kind of stuff we're saying. But the Celtics starting five, no one was over, like, they were all pluses in terms of plus minus, but the highest plus minus was Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart at plus six, Kyrie Irving at plus four. Everybody on their bench, the four guys that came off their bench, Hayward, Brown, Rozier, and Baines, we're basically hovering around plus 10. The Raptors starting unit, kind of the same thing, right? None of these guys were way more minus than they were a plus, but their bench guys, all minuses. I mean, not horrible minuses, but all minuses, and it shows, right? DeLon Wright had no points. Fred VanVleet had no points. Combined 0 of 6 in half an hour. I guess it is half an hour, and 30 minutes of playing time. That's horrendous, dude. Like, you're not going to be able to, I don't care if you are the best defensive guard in the entire league. If you don't put up a single point against Kyrie Irving, you're not doing your job well enough. And so that's kind of where I'm not scared. Like, obviously Kyle Lowry is able to play pretty well against Kyrie Irving, and he can always make assists. He can score. But Kyrie Irving, if you don't have a good backup point guard to at least produce on offense, then you're not doing anything against Kyrie Irving. That just mitigates all of your offensive power coming from the guard position when Kyle Lowry's off the court. And I think that will be changed once we have Valanciunas back in there, just because they'll be able to run better pick and rolls, because a Greg Monroe pick and roll doesn't scare anybody in the entire NBA. So it'll probably open up a little bit more. And, you know, Fred VanVleet, once he gets hot, he plays really well. And DeLon Wright, he, same thing with him. He's a very streaky player. Once he plays well, he plays really well. He just needs to find that spot and be able to consistently play at that level. And I hope that once it comes to playoff time and comes to a seven-game series against the Celtics, that'll kind of give him the motivation to stay up and to stay excited and play the best basketball that he can. So we can talk a little bit about the game. It was like we got off to a really good start. I was really excited in the first half of the first quarter. We went up 36-30 at the end of one, so a very good first quarter. Shot 53.8%, and then the second quarter came around. It started happening near the end of the first. The Raptors really couldn't get any buckets with a couple minutes left. I think the Raptors were up 10 or 12 at one point, you know, halfway through the first, maybe even 14. It looked really good. It looked really, really good. And then the bench unit came in, or at least some of the bench unit came in for Kyle Lowry. And they started playing pretty badly, and it went into the second quarter where they only had 17 points and gave up 34 to the Boston Celtics. I don't know, like, that was, in terms of concerning, just like I said about the bench, like, that was the most concerning part, because usually this team is good defensively, and usually they're able to do something, at least to stop someone from getting a basket, and it really didn't seem like they could there, because Boston shot, like, 9,000% from the field in that second quarter, which was pretty bad. Like, I mean, 61% in the second quarter is hard to give up. What was your biggest takeaway from this game? Like, what did you find caused that rut in the second for the Raptors?
You said it perfectly. Our bench is, there's been so many instances this season where they come in and they just throw these games where you're starting lineup is just playing so well, getting you these big leads, and then they just can't keep it. They just, I don't know what it is, they can't defend, or they just, I mean, they miss a lot of shots over large spans, especially like players like Van Vliet and CJ Miles, where these guys, they just can't shoot at all, and they just miss everything, even on open shots, which was a huge problem for the Raptors in the past. And then last year, the bench was probably the best in the league. I think they were, like, the most efficient. And now that we have a great starting lineup, they just, I mean, to be fair, they did get split up from their core bench. Like, Poto went to a different team. Siakam starts. OG starts sometimes. So you just mix and match this bench, and I guess it messed with the chemistry, and it just completely went down the drain. And our bench right now is just giving up these games, pretty much, where we are playing really well, and then they become extremely close games because of how poorly our bench is actually performing.
Yeah, I am on the same page there, as I've kind of said, but I think, once again, that the bench needs to just have consistent playing from everybody. And what I mean by that is not like consistent play, because obviously you need consistent, you know, performance from everybody. I mean consistent playing time with all of their players there. So whether that's keeping Ibaka as the starting center and leaving Valanciunas for however many games left, 40 games, or not 40 games, like, if he's back for 30 games, if he's back for 20 games, just kind of keep it the way that you want it to be and the way that you want that bench unit to run most of the time, just so they have that continuity. And everybody in the NBA talks about continuity. Why are the Warriors so good 3 years in a row? Other than the size, other than the fact that they have, you know, the four best players in the game, make it five now, they have continuity. Why have the Raptors been so good the past few years? Continuity. Same with the Blazers, continuity. And I think that was the big thing with the Raptors, is all the, throughout the whole season, they basically had the five-man rotation. They had 2 5-man rotations where they would just kind of play. They would play the starters, and then they just swap out five for five once the time came. And that's what really worked well with these guys. They were all playing with the same guys all the time. And it was basically like having a second starting unit out there, because they played so many minutes together and because they were so consistent with each other and they knew how each other played. Like, presumably they didn't even practice with other units, because why would you? And this year they don't have that, because if you're swapping in Ibaka and Valanciunas, then you add the injuries, then you add Norm Powell not playing well for a stretch, and Van Vliet getting injured, and DeLon Wright missing time, and OG missing time, and Lowry and Leonard missing time, and CJ Miles in and out of the lineup based on performance. It's really tough for these guys to get going with each other. And I know that that's kind of what a role player is supposed to do, just kind of fit in and play where they have to play. But It's tough when there's so many different changes at so many different points. And I think it really showed against a very good team, because Boston is probably, you know, one of the top three deepest teams in the league. And I think the Raptors are up there as well. And like you've seen with the struggles with Boston, it's basically been their depth. They have too much talent. They have too much this, too much that. And it hasn't seemed to work out the way they wanted to. And I'm not saying that it's not working out the way that we want it to in Toronto, but when it comes down to that bench unit, once they come on, they just get beat by everybody. And you're seeing it here. They got beat by Gordon Hayward. They got beat by Terry Rozier. Who gets beat by Terry Rozier? this year, at least, who gets beat by Terry Rozier? Not a lot of people, except for, you know, Norman Powell, Fred VanVleet, and DeLon Wright. So, like we've been saying this, you know, we've kind of harped on this a few times over the course of this season, the bench unit needs to be better. And then I think also one more thing that I would like to point out about this game is that it was a lot closer than the score really showed, because both teams went on some really big runs throughout the game. And after, aside from that, you know, that second quarter thumping that we got, the Raptors were up, what is it? Sorry, I'm trying to do this mental math in my head. They're up 8. So aside from that 17-point shellacking that we got in the second quarter, the Raptors win that game by 8 points, right? They lost the fourth quarter, they lost second quarter, but they won the first and third by so much, 6 and 7 points respectively. So once those starters are out there playing against any other starters in the NBA, we saw this against Golden State. We've seen it against the best teams in the entire league. Once this team's starters plays against another team's starter, and I'm going to go back to that first question I asked, that's why I'm not scared about this team, right? Once these guys are out there, it's dangerous. Like, it's a sight to see.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I think that killed me. Who gets beat by Terry Rozier? That's so funny, because it's true. This guy he's done nothing this season because he lost a starting role and then he kind of gave up. But apparently he beats DeLon Wright, Fred VanVleet, and Powell. So, I mean, something's got to be done. I think we talked about it before. That's why they traded for McCaw, to like kind of maybe shake things up a bit, a little change. Never hurt anybody, but I mean, you said it, because they just need to play together as a unit in these games more often, because they're getting split up a lot. Like, some, obviously Fred VanVleet was playing with the starting squad, so he wasn't playing with the usual suspects of the bench, because Kyle Lowry was out, which is, it's not his fault, obviously, because we needed a starting point guard. But I think now the focus should be to make sure that our bench is good enough to run these playoffs, because as it's looking, we're just going to get beat in a 7-game series if the bench doesn't change.
Agreed. And I don't know whether it's a personnel change that needs to be made, or if it's just, you know, something that has to be worked out between the guys. I don't know. And you saw that with the Celtics game, right? That's all it is. So now let's talk about, I don't know if I should call these, you know, positives to get away from the negative that we just talked about, but 2 wins this week out of the 3 that we had were against Phoenix and Washington. And those should have been really, really, really easy games. Like, really easy games. Washington has sucked all year, except for when John Wall is out. But,
yep.
But, to kind of bring that back here, I think, you know, Washington always seems to give the Raptors a problem, no matter what, whether it's the playoffs, whether it's regular season. But from what I have picked up and from what I've seen, it's usually John Wall that is starting all of these problems, and he's kind of the caveat for every single problem that they've had. And Wall wasn't playing. But then again, this team, the Washington team, plays so much better without John Wall, which is pretty hilarious. So anyways, this was a, if I don't know if you watched the entirety of this game, but it was a nail biter. It was played in the afternoon on January 13th, last Sunday. And like I said, double overtime games. This game basically ended at night. But we had a 15-point lead at the end of the first quarter. I turned the game off until I got a notification on my phone at the end of the third. Got a little tighter. All right, maybe I'll tune back in for the fourth quarter. I wish I didn't do that because I hate watching the Washington Wizards hit shots. And that is the only thing that they did in that fourth quarter. They shot 77% from two and 66% from three for a total of 727, 72.7% from the field in that fourth quarter. And I don't know about you, but I couldn't tell whether it was a defensive thing for the Raptors or if the Wizards just got hot. What was your takeaway from that little shebang of a fourth quarter that the Wizards put up?
To be honest, I wasn't actually there for that. I only came back home when it was OT, but I'm just going to guess from recent history with Washington Wizards, they just got hot for no reason. Just like, I don't know what it is. Maybe we just lose all sense of defense when we play them, but Washington is other than LeBron, obviously, is our Achilles heel in the Eastern Conference, because like you said, we should not be going that far against a Washington team whose only real player is Bradley Beal, other than Wall, but Wall is just proven to be a problem for that team. And when I was watching an OT, it was like just shot for shot pretty much. Until the end, obviously, of OT when we got that, when Ibaka hit that go-ahead three to win the game. But I can't explain it. It's Washington should not be doing that well against us, but yeah, they are.
If you look at the shot chart for their fourth quarter and compare it to like the third and second quarters and stuff like that, it is like unbelievable how many shots they got inside the paint or from three. So like basically every shot that they took except for two, it looks like, were from inside the paint or three-point line. So that's basically playing Houston Rockets James Harden style of basketball, and they did it perfectly. Led to 40 points, led to an overtime game, and after OT, I mean, it didn't look fantastic after giving up 40 points to the Washington Wizards at the end of the fourth quarter. But going into OT, the Raptors did still kind of, you know, play half-decent basketball. And they tried to calm down the Beal and all that kind of stuff. But when you look at the final, you know, few like scoring possessions in OT and I don't know why I'm blanking on this, but the fourth quarter, you can see that Kawhi Leonard took over. He absolutely took over. The last 4 points in the fourth, which isn't a whole lot, was Kawhi Leonard. The first 2 points in overtime, Kawhi Leonard. The first 5 points, Kawhi Leonard. The first 7 points, Kawhi Leonard. That's all the points in overtime. It's Kawhi. So he went on an 11 to whatever run, but he had all 11 points. He had 13 straight points for the Raptors. That took me a long time to do that math, but he had 13 straight points for the Raptors in that overtime. And a thing that we've said a lot on this podcast is that we don't like how Kawhi Leonard's been in late game situations. And that's my one, like, aside from them winning the game in that Serge Ibaka three, that is kind of the one impressive thing that I saw from the game, because like we've said, and I just said it here, like we've been talking about Kawhi Leonard not really being able to close out games. And obviously he wasn't able to close out this game. He missed two straight potential, you know, game winning shots to end this. But after those two, he was able to pick himself up and score 13 straight points for the Toronto Raptors, or I guess it would be 11 because it was after that, after the few points he had at the end of the fourth. But he was able to pick himself up and score 11 or 9 straight points in overtime, which is unbelievable against not necessarily the best defensive team, but I wouldn't necessarily say they're scrubs either. What do you think? Do you think this is a good thing for, obviously it's a good thing for Kawhi Leonard, but do you think this is going to continue against even better competition?
I hope so. I hope this is just a view into what obviously he can do. It's just showing how much more comfortable he's getting with this team. I mean, we'll just have to see, because if that is any like showing of what he can do in the fourth quarter, I just hope it stays that way, because he kind of carried us to that victory at the end.
Sorry, go ahead there.
I was just going to say, other than the Ibaka three.
Yeah, big time. So we can go into this Phoenix Suns game here, and it kind of the same thing happened in this game as what happened in the Wizards game and what happened in the Celtics game, where they went up by 12 at the end of the first. They lost the two middle quarters and then came back for a fourth quarter surge to win the game by 2 points.
By the layup by Siakam.
Siakam's beautiful left-handed layup. That game is a little more concerning to me than the other two. And I know it was the second half of a back-to-back, but you're still playing the Phoenix Suns. And I guess
Kawhi-less.
And yeah, that's true. Kawhi Leonard wasn't playing. But they've been really good on the second night of back-to-backs. And maybe this is a little bit unnecessary for me to think, but they've been really good on the second half of back-to-backs. And this game kind of, this game kind of put into my head that they aren't as strong-willed as we think they are. Like, they, once again, Van Fleet was a minus 7, right? They played Patrick McCaw minus 10 in 5 minutes. Greg Monroe minus 4 and 11. Not horrible. But then the other guys, they didn't impose their will on this game. Kyle Lowry, I would say, probably had the second best game on the team. Siakam had a pretty bad game other than that layup. And when you don't have Kawhi Leonard, you should be moving the ball a lot more than they were. And if you look at their assist percentages in this game for the Raptors, they're all pretty high. But that, to me, looks like they were coming off of ISOs, one pass to an open man, and a shot. I didn't like how they were playing that game of basketball after the first quarter. The first quarter was fantastic, but after that first quarter, they looked really ugly. Does this game have more weight to you than the Celtics game?
I'm going to say no, just because it was on like the back half of a back-to-back without Kawhi Leonard. Obviously, them being better usually on the second half of a back-to-back. But I just feel like the Phoenix Suns' worst team in the league, other than like Cleveland, to those two in the bottom. So I'm guessing they went into this game just not giving a shit at all, just because of how bad their team is. So I don't feel like we have to be worried. We got the win, which is really all we wanted from that game. They played the bench more, I think. Like, McCaw had 18 minutes in total. So I'm not worried about it at all. Not at all, but I don't think we have to be that worried about it.
Yeah, it might just be the pessimist in me coming out, because we're getting closer to the playoffs, and I expect a lot out of this team. So maybe it's just a little bit of an overreaction for me, and seeing how there were three straight ugly games there, put a bit of worry into my head, just based on the fact that they they weren't really able to get up for that game against the Celtics. And then you'd think that they'd be able to come back out of that one and try to get a statement win, I guess is what I was expecting. So maybe saying that it was a bad game is a little bit of an overreaction from me.
I mean, they did. They came back with the Memphis game and played with them.
Exactly. And so now I don't really want to talk much about that Memphis game because in terms of talking points, there isn't really much other than we whooped them. We played fantastic team basketball and there was nothing that the Grizzlies could do. Even without Kawhi Leonard in the lineup. But what I did want to talk about was two things. The plus minus of, we're just going to get back to it here. The plus minus of the starters was out of this world. And the Memphis Grizzlies, although they've been on quite a bit of a slump right now, are a pretty decent team with, you know, they've got Conley and I guess Marc Gasol wasn't playing that game, but Mike Conley is still a fantastic player. The starters, I'll go through the plus minus of all the starters here. Kyle Lowry plus 38, Siakam plus 40, Fred VanVleet finally plus 26, Serge Ibaka plus 21, Danny Green plus 22. And I want to talk about that last guy that I just mentioned right here.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Green, what was it? It was a just under seven minute run where Danny Green went absolutely bonkers for this team. He hit seven threes in that 7 minute span and just took the life out of the building, but took the life out of the Grizzlies and gave it into every single fan that was sitting in the Scotiabank Arena. And now I wrote a piece this week and I put it up on take6.org, basically grading the Toronto sports fans. And there's a reason why I graded the Raptors so highly. And this is exactly why. By the end of that 7 minute run, the Raptors were up 20 and change against this Memphis Grizzlies team. And usually when your team is up 20 and change against the Memphis Grizzlies team in the third quarter, people aren't necessarily into it. Yeah, they're fired up. Oh, we're winning by a lot. But these guys, you know how excited fans get and the camera starts shaking a little bit? You know when that happens at games? That's what happened when Danny Green was hitting those shots. And it blew my mind because we're up 20 points and it's a three-pointer, a wide-open three-pointer from Danny Green, and the camera's shaking. So right there, I think that just reinforced exactly what I was saying in my article. But I kind of want to hear your thoughts on what Danny Green did there. Is this guy the best throw-in for a trade that you've ever seen?
For the Raptors, for sure. This guy he's proving himself over and over again why he deserves to be this, like, having that starting role on our team. And that game, oh my God, just watching that third quarter, I got chills, man. It was amazing. Obviously, that's what it's like to be in Golden State all the time. Every time they hit a three, the whole stadium goes crazy. But I just love to see it because, like, Danny Green, he was just on fire. Scoring, like, I saw his stat line and it was like 8 3 points made. Did he have 8 rebounds as well?
It was 7 rebounds. Seven rebounds.
Man, like, he showed up and carried us. Not carried, obviously, but like just kept piling it on. Like, that's what you got to do when you're up. You can't give any leeway. You just got to pile that on, and that's exactly what he did. And also, another guy who finally showed up was a certain man by the name of C.J. Miles, who showed up, I think, was it the second quarter?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he actually did something this season, which is unheard of by him. He also had 5 steals, which is pretty insane.
But the thing is we think of C.J. Miles as this fantastic three-point shooter. And to be fair, he has been good in his career. And we expect so much from him. But even, like we said, he had a good game. And he shot 2 of 6 from 3. 4 of 12 from
I didn't say he had a good game. I said he showed up in the second quarter.
Okay, right? Fair enough.
Which, for him, is showing up
is in a general good game.
Because he hasn't done anything all season. But it was good to see him finally hit some shots in a row. And I mean, hopefully that's insight into him playing better in the future, but I'm not going to get my hopes up. When you play bad the entire season, one game won't change much. But Danny Green, though, is definitely, I'm loving him on this team.
There's no way that you couldn't love this guy. You'd be a lunatic if you didn't love this guy. But out of those four games that we talked about, from Wizards to Celtics to Suns to Grizzlies, which game do you think has, I don't want to say the most implications on the rest of the season, because that's obvious, that's the Celtics, but which one do you think the Raptors can take the most away from and try to finish off this back half of the NBA season and go into the playoffs looking like?
I'm going to say, even though it wasn't that big a deal, the Memphis game, just because of how well players outside of Kawhi, Siakam, Lowry, even Ibaka played, like Danny Green showing up, Van Vliet having a good plus minus, not playing super well, but just if we can get, like we were talking about before, if we get this bench in shape going before the end of the season, that would just be the way into the finals, really, is if our bench can start performing like they used to.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with the Celtics game in terms of what they can take away from it, only because they had such a good first quarter that I think that they've been able to figure out their offensive and defensive, not just assignments, but everything on the offense and defense when it comes to playing the Celtics for the starters. So being able to put that together and work towards a 7-game series in the finals, we're going to see them one more time in February. And that'll be, I think, the biggest game of our season so far, because Boston, I think, is going to be the one team who is going to look the most dangerous in terms of playoffs for us outside of, yeah, like I don't even think, like outside of the Western Conference. So I think that they're going to be able to take this and come into that next game on February 26th hungry and ready to show the league that they're ready to win a playoff series, hopefully, because if they don't show up for that game, I might be a little bit worried, because they'll be able to go into Boston, play on ESPN, and give Boston fans and Boston coaches and Boston management and ESPN and people in Canada something to worry about when coming and playing the Raptors, especially if the Raptors have home court advantage. So I'm taking more away from that Celtics game, because they did, like I said, it was closer than the score showed. It was closer than the final game went out. Kyle Lowry. Kyrie Irving is not going to have 18 assists. Kyle Lowry might. I could see that happening, but Kyrie Irving's not going to have 18 assists, especially in a big game. That guy doesn't pass when it comes down to really, really big games in the playoffs. But maybe, who knows? Maybe LeBron said, you gotta pass now. So anyways, I think we can finish this up. I'm going to the Sacramento Kings game tomorrow night, which I'm really excited about. And we can talk about that next week on the podcast. Callum, have a fantastic evening, and we'll talk to you next week, buddy.